regulation after regulation.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be
new
changed.
New government regulations, which were created to protect
the
employees.
The regulations are
$1.8 trillion.
There's a regulation that doesn't make any sense. Why do you keep
it? Is this really the best we can do?
Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hi, thank you for joining us on another episode of the Regulatory Transparency Project's Explainer podcast. I'm Jennifer Huddleston, and I'm the Director of Technology and Innovation Policy at American Action Forum.
And my name is Ian Adams. I'm the Executive Director at the International Center for Law and Economics.
And today we're going to be talking about questions regarding data privacy or data protection laws, and particularly the question of potential enforcement mechanisms for those laws. Now, we've seen a lot of debate over the course of the last year to 2 years, particularly here in the United States, but also all around the world, about whether or not there needs to be greater regulation of data privacy. One of the areas where there's been a lot of contention in these debates is over if there were to be such increased regulations, what should the enforcement mechanisms look like? And that's particularly true here in the U.S. at both a state and a federal level. At times, this is really portrayed as a dichotomy between a private right of action or just leaving things as the status quo. So today we're going to talk about what that status quo is, what the whole range of data privacy enforcement options are, as well as what some of the potential trade-offs in different data privacy enforcement might be, and why this seems to be such a flashpoint in these debates. So to get started with, let's talk about where the data privacy landscape is right now. So we're sitting here in May. It's hard to remember these days during the pandemic, what month it is, of 2020. And really this debate has been going on in its current form since about 2018. We've seen the GDPR, the General Data Protection Rule in Europe, spur a live debate of does the U.S. need its own equivalent of the GDPR? We've also seen certain data breaches and other questions about online privacy come up and spur a conversation around this. At the same time, we've seen a lot of innovation, and we've really, right now during this pandemic, I think a lot of us have really found beneficial uses of data, ways that the fact that these technologies have been able to evolve have really allowed us to stay connected to other people. There have been several bills proposed at a federal level, but nothing has really gained traction. On a state level, we've seen many states propose bills, and we've also seen a couple of states pass their own data privacy legislation, most notably California with the California Consumer Privacy Act that went into effect in January and now is set to become enforceable in July.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating time if you're interested in privacy, and I should say, Jennifer, that you wrote a fantastic paper on this very topic, and I think that the listeners would do well to read it. I'm blanking on the name, if you could provide that.
So the paper is available on American Action Forum's website, and it's a primer on data privacy enforcement options, and I have a link pinned to my Twitter page, which is at JR Huddles, and I will also pass that along to our friends at the Regulatory Transparency Project. Hopefully they can include a link in the notes with this episode of this podcast. But Ian, I know you've spent a lot of time on various California-related issues. To kind of start us off with, what does enforcement look like in the CCPA? If they continue to flip the switch on July, right now it appears to be, what would enforcement look like for that particular privacy law?
Well, under the CCPA, there is a limited private right of action related specifically to data breaches and harms that are suffered as a result of data breaches. But the vast majority of the enforcement that will be done under the CCPA will be undertaken by the California Attorney General's office. And there are a litany of technical violations that the Attorney General's office is going to be able to pursue once the law becomes enforceable in July. But I would hasten to add that the profundity of the enforcement dynamics that will come about as a result of the CCPA in July stand to pale in comparison to what may be the case if California voters this November adopt a proposed initiative that would change the scope of personal information that would qualify to trigger events and trigger enforcement, to say nothing of the fact that that initiative would also lead to the creation of an entirely new specific agency for enforcement of privacy rights as conceived under the act. So we don't know how it's going to work in practice, because we hear a lot about how the Attorney General's office is going to be resource constrained. But I think it's fair to say that you are going to see high profile firms prosecuted or see enforcement actions brought against them by the Attorney General's office in short order as a way of developing precedent under California law that other firms will be able to draw from. It's going to be a whole new era in the Golden State. And of course, there are all kinds of fascinating questions about how broadly the act will be interpreted and if it will implicate businesses that think they're beyond the reach of the law. That's another question. But that's where we sit right now in California. We are just days away at this point from a new chapter in this privacy saga.
And are these recommendations from the Attorney General, are they really clear? If I were to, you know, want to start a company in California, is this something where I would have very clear guidance right now, you would say?
I would not say that. So, of course, it wouldn't be California if things weren't confusing. And, of course, having passed the law over a year ago at this point, the Attorney General's office is considering the promulgation of regulations to interpret provisions of the statute. But those regulations are not in a final form. They're still in the process of being commented upon. And so firms are going to have to attempt to discern how they think the Attorney General's office will ultimately come down on those regulations, how they will interpret the law. Efforts and calls for the regulations and enforcement of the law to be delayed have been met with opposition. There are no plans at the Attorney General's office to not begin enforcing the CCPA come July. And it's going to lead to all kinds of bizarro outcomes. I have to think, you know, you never know the future, but it's not a great situation when you're subject to a law and it's not clear what the law's limits really are.
I think we can certainly imagine how having that very narrow time frame, even if you were trying to comply with the law and want it to, you know, be a good corporate citizen, would be very stressful at a normal time, let alone at the given the kind of current situation where everyone's working remotely and trying to stay connected, and it might be more difficult to communicate with certain teams or have everyone come together to figure out how to solve certain problems. One thing you mentioned with this California law was that it might not just impact these kind of large players. And I think that's something that's very important in the data privacy context, particularly when we're talking about enforcement, and particularly when we're talking about some of these technical enforcement matters, not necessarily a case where harm has been shown or even where harm has been shown to be extremely likely to occur, but kind of a minor issue where it's more of a concern about non-compliance than actual harm befalling a consumer or an insecurity in data. And we've seen some of these concerns in other state laws, such as Illinois' biometric privacy law. And we also have a lot of concerns in terms of, why are we talking about California? Ian, you and I wrote a paper back in the fall about how there are potential concerns about a state patchwork emerging, given the lack of a federal law that preempts state laws like California's law, and also some of the concerns that these laws in and of themselves may create in a constitutional sense and why there actually may be some constitutional concerns in these state data privacy laws.
But I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, it begs the question, why are states at this point feeling so strongly about taking action here? And of course, that comes back to action or lack of action that Congress has taken when it comes to privacy legislation that states would see as appropriate given the state of technology and connectedness. But as your paper goes into in some detail, we have at the federal level an existing regulatory entity that pays very close attention to these matters and at this point has something of a track record of enforcing actions against firms that have committed privacy wrongs. And that, of course, is the Federal Trade Commission.
Which I think this is a good time to kind of go back to that federal level and talk about what are some of those enforcement options. We also see these same debates emerging at a state level. For example, Washington State had a privacy bill that had a big dispute over whether or not to include private right of action in it. And the potential inclusion of a private right of action was probably a large part of the reason why that bill was unsuccessful. I think, though, when we're talking about a federal level and when we're talking about potential changes to enforcement, it is a good time to start with the status quo of, at times people make this argument that there's a lack of enforcement on a federal level, but we have seen that the FTC has had some very sizable enforcement actions. And in fact, some enforcement actions and fines that some people have expressed concerns are almost too large. In some cases, it seems like the fines are an issue where it's a Goldilocks syndrome at times of one side's going to call it too small and one side's going to call it too big, and the fine itself is in the middle. So, for example, a lot of people probably remember the Cambridge Analytica concerns, and it was the Federal Trade Commission that was able to bring an enforcement action against Facebook over violations of a previous private right of action. And the $5 billion fine in that case is actually larger than the similar fines that would be available under GDPR, which is Europe's law that is considered very strict penalty. But we also saw that on both sides, there were people saying that this particular fine was not high enough. On the other hand, there's also the fact that these consent decrees that the FTC puts companies under last a really long time, typically 15, 20 years, which in the technology space can be an entire lifetime of a product. Think about where technology was 20 years ago. Imagine if we were having to deal with this pandemic in 2000 or 1999 or 2001 rather than today in 2020. Our connectivity, the products that we were using, everything would have looked a lot different. So
yeah, we all would have been on Skype. It would have been horrible.
So possibly, you know, some of the length of some of these more restrictive on a particular company over a mistake or over a concern may prevent it from actually improving its security or engaging in certain practices that later prove to be commonplace. But that being said, the current system isn't perfect. Ian, do you have some potential policy recommendations on if we were to continue FTC enforcement, how might that be reformed in a way that would allow it to appropriately address some of the concerns that people have had about it?
Well, I think one of the reasons that there are concerns around the FTC's approach is, just as you say, it requires a consent decree for firms to be subject to enforcement actions and penalties by the FTC. Of course, that makes perfect sense, right? Because depending on the authority that the FTC is exercising, the standards involved can be quite vague, and those consent decrees are what adds that layer of certitude around the sorts of behavior that the commission would like to see avoided. So, you know, to the extent that there can be more universal clarity around what constitutes a violation in the context of consumer privacy, that would really help the FTC. That's something that likely has to be done through legislation. But of course, policymakers could grant the FTC authority, limited authority, hopefully, to expound upon what those violations would look like. So either of those two approaches or some combination of those two approaches would go a long way to empowering the FTC to play a role that is at once predictable, which is important because we don't want different firms to be playing by different rules. And clearly, privacy is a value that at the state level and increasingly at the federal level, policymakers are paying attention to, but we don't want it to be arbitrarily applied. I would also say that at the bottom line is there are limits when it comes to personnel at the FTC, because the Federal Trade Commission looks at more, of course, than just privacy harms. They're thinking about competition. They're thinking about all sorts of other issues. So having some dedicated staffing, having some dedicated resources for this purpose, that would also help a great deal to buttressing the capabilities of the FTC and giving them the opportunity to do what I think increasingly Congress and the American public would hope that they're doing.
Well, and I think it's important to point out that that clarity not only helps the FTC engage in more even-handed enforcement, and it also provides a clarity and a certainty to consumers and also to innovators. So it really is a chance to improve this information around everyone so that there's a better understanding of what actually constitutes the violation and what you should do if you're concerned about a potential violation. At the same time, I think it's important to recognize that this is a very quick moving field. And one of the advantages of the light touch American approach has been that we haven't put overly restrictive precautionary regulation on data so that people can think innovatively and people can have innovative ways of potentially even improving security and privacy, rather than having to constantly go to a federal regulator to ask for permission. Now, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the California law that there's a ballot initiative in California that part of what it would do would be potentially create a new agency. There's also been some federal proposals that have included the potential to create a new kind of data privacy agency or a data protection agency or some sort of American data agency to just deal with these kind of issues, or potentially to deal with more generally kind of a digital marketplace or something like that. We see in Europe that they have data protection agencies or DPAs under the GDPR as well as before that. Given that data touches so many fields, it seems like this would be a potential really large expansion of the administrative state and a chance for an agency that could have a lot of power in a lot of different areas, not just online, but offline as well.
I think that's right. I think that on net, what we have with proposals around the creation of specific privacy or data oversight agencies, as we've seen in Europe, is the syndrome where you've got a hammer and everything that you see is a nail. And so you are going to see what would be otherwise benign activities looked at with a great deal of scrutiny by a regulator whose job and charge it is specifically to find potential harms, theoretical harms in the context of privacy, to say nothing of the fact that the way that these entities are often structured at the state level, as proposed in California law, for instance, they tend to be funded based on the fines that are received by the agency related to the actions that they undertake. So, I mean, you can't have a worse sort of incentive when it comes to choosing enforcement targets than the fact that your very agency is sustained by the necessity of assessing a certain number when it comes to fines. I'm not a huge fan of that approach. I think that the FTC, as it currently exists, has the authority and the expertise necessary. It's not a question of the FTC having expertise or not. It's a question of the FTC currently having the right tools to move forward in balancing the pursuit of privacy wrongs and privacy harms against other priorities that it has in this moment, and making sure they have the resources to take care of that charge.
We brought up again and again the role that states have seemed to want to play in this. And it's interesting to think about, given the internet doesn't follow borders, it's actually, at times, we've seen the potential disruption that a single country's law can have, let alone a single state kind of setting up borders that would either result in de facto federal law, or in a case of a certain state might not have certain products available to it, or might have a different form of a product available to it, or it might be more difficult for products to get off the ground with having to pick and choose which states they want it to offer it in online. But we do seem to see this momentum of states that they want to be involved in data privacy some way. I was trying to think of, is there a way that states could be involved in the data privacy debate that wouldn't risk this kind of creation of a patchwork, that would still have it at least a federal framework where, again, while you will potentially have some disruptions with a U.S. framework versus a EU framework, that wouldn't necessarily have that real patchwork effect that many of us are concerned about on a state-by-state level. And it seems like state attorney generals could potentially be a part of this enforcement. Now, there certainly is a risk in using state attorney generals that you could have 51 different legal opinions on what a certain word means. But with the appropriate guidance, either from federal legislation or from a federal authority like the Federal Trade Commission, that has the ability to give direction to these state officials in terms of what this could look like, it seems like that might be a place where, if there's a need to get states involved in some way, that's a way of not necessarily completely taking away any sense of state involvement in this field. Ian, what do you think about state attorney generals being able to be involved in this?
Yeah, I think that's right. In part because it would allow for a reflection of the intensity of preference of the state when it comes to data privacy issues. Some states, this is assuming that there's a federal law that they're involved with the enforcement of, but some states, this might be a huge priority for, other states, less so. And I think that that is a good way to stand in for a patchwork of bespoke privacy laws, which are going to reflect different values. We want to see different values come forth. Of course, we're on a Federalist Society podcast. We understand the importance of having localities and lower level jurisdictions, subnational jurisdictions, having them empowered. I think empowering the state attorney generals to interpret and bring suit on the basis of federal law in this case, it helps the FTC take some of the enforcement burden off their plate. Also allows states to have some say in the significance of the issue relative to other priorities that the attorney general may be pursuing. And I would also say that attorneys general at the state level, there are many FTC acts at the state level. These are offices and these are officials that are not unacquainted with the process of consumer protection. That tends to be an authority that they take very seriously, and they have offices within larger attorney general offices dedicated to that very process. So I would say they've got the expertise. There is a good structure constitutionally for them to do this. And while there is some risk about some really overly zealous attorney generals taking action, I think that it's probably something where there's a good enough balance between the various priorities here that empowering them through federal legislation makes a lot of sense.
Now, of course, perhaps the most contentious debate when it comes to potential enforcement of a federal data privacy law or of some of the state proposals is the potential for a private right of action. There certainly have been some advocates who seem to think that a law won't have the necessary teeth if individuals or classes of individuals, as would likely be the case in many scenarios, lack the ability to sue to enforce this. We have seen some state data privacy laws that have a private right of action. As you mentioned earlier, the California Consumer Privacy Act has this very limited one regarding data breach. There is an Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act that has actually been found to have this as its main form of enforcement. And as a result, we have seen quite a few lawsuits with quite attenuated harm in them that are able to go after companies over things like photo tagging or the use of biometrics to tie a an annual pass at an amusement park to an individual's thumbprints, again, not necessarily over a concern of harm over a data breach where this sensitive information was leaked, but over the harm being defined rather broadly, things as low as kind of mere collection or mere violation of a specific statutory requirement. When we're looking at a potential federal private right of action, it seems like this would raise a lot of the concerns that have been expressed in the past over potential needs for tort reform in the U.S. The fact that these class action suits may create the wrong incentives for individuals and for innovative companies and not necessarily actually resolve the harm that they're intended to. On the other hand, there's also been some question of, is there a way a private right of action could be structured to not necessarily have these same problems? For example, if it only provided injunctive relief rather than monetary damages. But there still seems to be a bit of this disconnect, particularly when it comes to the question of what would the harm in these potential data privacy cases really be?
Well, I think, you know, that hits the nail on the head, to go back to the hammer and nail analogy. Yeah, that's exactly it. The problem is we're having conversations about preemption. We're having conversations about enforcement, and rightly so, because these are important scoping mechanisms. But at the end of the day, Congress needs to be thinking first and foremost about exactly the harms it would like to see addressed. And without a clear understanding of discrete harms that it would like to see addressed, the nature of a private right of action is really hard to get your arms wrapped around. I think part of the reason that private rights of action come up is because the impetus for so much of the federal conversation has been around the way that the GDPR has functioned, which is a more rights-based and more amorphous approach to the identification of harms and of claims that could subsequently be brought around those harms. And so in such a scenario, to couple that with a private right of action, the doors of the courthouse are going to be wide open in a way that will have a serious chilling effect on the ability of firms to operate. And you know, maybe that's something that's desirable if you are a privacy absolutist, that you really want to be able to ensure that you have an ability to keep firms accountable on the basis of the way that information that is related to you is handled. But these legislative bodies are trying to make different sorts of calls when it comes to preferences that consumers have about the extent to which they value their privacy. And with a private right of action coupled with an overly broad statute that would allow for an expansive understanding of what harms, or as amorphous as they may be, could be considered, would fundamentally leave open to all sorts of litigation huge swaths of the American economy, whether it be the digital platforms or, in some cases, brick and mortar businesses. So it's a hard issue, just because it's not as though private rights of action are inherently problematic. They're not. As Jennifer points out, you've got different sorts of private rights of action that you could conceive of here. But you have to have that predicate conversation to understand the scope of the actions that you're really going to be confronted with should any sort of federal law include this enforcement mechanism.
Well, and you mentioned the GDPR in your comments, Ian. When we're talking about the EU approach, this is somewhere where there's also a difference, because there's a different approach to torts in general. There are a lot of concerns about the litigious nature of American society and the fact that at times, you know, we have the most lawsuits of anywhere and things like that. But there's also a different structure. There's no loser pays rule. The incentives are a bit different. So even something that might be able to work in a certain framework in Europe, there are certain facets of the American legal system that would make that very difficult to import over here, even if it was a very similar privacy framework.
I think that's right.
Well, Ian, I think that we've had a really rousing conversation about a lot of different potential enforcement options. And as you pointed out in kind of your last segment, I think a lot of this really does come down to any kind of legislation addressing this will really need to struggle with and grapple on what is the harm that you're trying to remedy and make sure that the enforcement mechanisms are adequately and appropriately reflecting that that need to remedy that while still allowing the real advantages of the light touch approach that has enabled innovation to flourish. So I think we'll probably be continuing to see this debate even not just the rest of this year, but going forward as we see, you know, different states grappling with this issue and as we see what happens with California's enforcement and what happens with the ballot initiative you mentioned, as well as what happens on a federal level.
Yeah, and in the context of the COVID-19 crisis, of course, we have to consider how responses take into account our privacy. And so that has recentered the privacy debate. And what's so fascinating is it is adding all kinds of new fuel to the conversation around what sort of enforcement mechanisms make sense. But in the context of an exigent circumstance, which is the need for information to fight the virus. And so it's fascinating to watch how this whole conversation has evolved and will continue to evolve. And Jennifer, I hope we're able to get back together to discuss some of the fallout in the context of privacy harms and enforcement mechanisms before too long.
Absolutely. I think that this pandemic has also really highlighted that at the end of the day, a lot of these discussions around privacy really are discussions about trade-offs. And it's really a question of what trade-offs an individual may want to make, as well as the potential trade-offs in these regulations that we're seeing. We've certainly seen that with the GDPR and some of the potential COVID responses. So thank you for joining me today, and hopefully we can at least virtually get together again soon.
Count on it.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.